Welcome to the Men of Eight Gang Podcast, episode 178. I'm Steve Borsch, and I am on with Graham Thickens.
Hey, good morning from Bloomington. I'm ready to go with music like that.
All right. Phil Wilson.
Good morning.
How you guys doing?
Just great, thanks.
Our buddy Tim is off today, and so we're going to have to do the show without him, so we'll try not to be too sad, but we'll see what happens there.
Tim.
Yeah, as always. I just have to start with this about how our summers used to be. We'd sit around, we'd scratch our heads like, what in the world are we going to talk about on this week's show? Do you remember that?
Oh yeah.
And now there's so much going on that, I don't know, just, it's incredible every single week, but the first thing that I wanted to start off with, if you guys don't mind, is this article on Minnesota Public Radio about the high-tech sensors that have been put into the 35W bridge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Star Tribune's been running a big series on survivors of the bridge collapse. Mm-hmm. And all these sensors are connected to the bridge. And I've been thinking a lot about this because of the whole Internet of Things.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And what's happening with sensor technology and now with IPv6. I've been doing a little knowledge gathering on this. Did you guys know that IPv4
yes.
has 4.3 billion IP addresses, all of which have been given out now?
Oh, okay.
And IPv6 has 340 trillion networks. Each of which have a trillion IP addresses.
Oh yeah, isn't it? It's a trillion, I believe. I think there's even one more level of trillions. So,
there's 36 zeros after the 340.
So we're not going to have to worry about hooking up all these things real soon.
Then. No, and in fact, I got into a discussion the other day with somebody that was talking about, won't it be cool, instead of having a MAC address buried in a device, what if you could literally put an IP address on a chip? And so as you're making hundreds of thousands of chips, each one would have its own IP address.
Sure.
I thought that was kind of interesting, except at some point then they're all going to be retired because they're going to stop working. Or Phil will still have it, like he has his trio. Don't you still have your trio in a trio in a drawer somewhere? No,
I'm falling back on that. You know, yeah, I think I still have my trio in a drawer somewhere. I don't know. What am I going to sell it on Craigslist?
Well, they get old enough; they get value as collectors.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
That's true. That's antiques. True. That's true.
Like the SE30 sitting in my garage in the remember the Macintosh bag, Steve?
Oh yeah.
You could carry your SE30 in.
Yeah, but boy, do I ever!
Still got one in the garage.
Oh, hang on to that. Absolutely, hang on to that. Well, so this whole Internet of Things, you know, you brought it up, Graham. I also got asked by Ben to like their Facebook page, but Smart Things, Ben Edwards,
Ben Edwards, who we know, you know, most people know probably through the mini demo and bar organizers. Ben has got looks like a new startup called Smart Things, and it looks very much like an Internet of Things play that connects you a lot of your things to the internet and all, of course, obviously accessible via phone and that sort of thing.
So. Yeah, controllable probably by phone.
Right, exactly.
But they show pictures to tease us with, and we'll put a link in the show notes, but it looks like a little Wi-Fi router and then a bunch of little tiny devices that I guess you'd plug stuff into, but a plug, a sense, you know, a ambient sensor, all kinds of different stuff, and a circuit board. So I'm assuming so you can build your own.
Mm-hmm.
So that should be pretty interesting. We're gonna have to ping Ben and
see what's going on. I haven't heard from him yet, but I'm starting to wonder. This smells like it could be a Kickstarter project, perhaps, being a hardware thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know that to be the case. I haven't read every word on the Facebook page, but my God, they've already got 2,700 likes or something like that.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And there's almost 8,000 people talking about it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, 2609 likes, I guess, is what it says here. Yeah.
Yep.
You know what it looks like? When I looked at the box, I thought, looks like Cram. Remember Darren Clum's Cram box?
Sure.
Looks just like that, sort of an oval, or not square, but sort of semi-square thing with an antenna in the back. The world is about to get a whole lot smarter. Well, that's good.
Yeah. You know what, though?
We could use that.
We need that.
But it makes total sense. I mean, we had, everyone's experienced this, especially if you're in a house that's over, 15, 20 years old, where all of a sudden one day it's super hot and your air conditioner stops working. And so I called the service company and they came out and the guy goes, you're down on Freon. And so he charges the thing up with a couple of bottles of Freon. And it's not Freon, it's something else now, some other.
R something or other.
Yeah, yeah. Some other chemical. But we're dancing, air conditioner comes back on and we're good to go. Now, wouldn't it have been great if I got a notification on my phone that says, oh, by the way, your Freon's low or your air conditioner's going to stop working. And I would love that.
Oh, tell me about it.
So,
yeah, I had a fuse go out on me and we suffered for 2 days in the worst heat of the summer.
Well, we're going to have to keep a close eye on Ben's thing, and the whole Internet of Things is something we're obviously keeping an eye on. But so, Phil, did you put this in about the layoffs and online publishing?
Yeah, there was, we've always talked about how publishing and print media is struggling to make the transition into digital and, with the digital age, what it's going to do to print. Yep. And, of course, you remember the Daily when it came out for the iPad, which was, oh, gosh, a little over a year ago. Maybe it was longer ago than that. Do you remember, Steve?
I downloaded it and I called it the Slowly.
Right. Yes, exactly. But they are—they're laying off like a third of their staff. So now layoffs have hit online publishing. So I just found that kind of interesting. Is publishing in general dead? Is reading dead? That's what it is. There's the headline. Is reading dead?
Well, it is when it costs as much as the Daily. I mean, yeah. I took the free. The free trial subscription, did they even give us a month? They might have only given us like a week.
I think,
and then they wanted to charge us this outrageous amount of money. And I thought, why would I need this,
Well, and it always comes back to that concept of how are publishers going to make a living online? I mean, do we have to give everything away?
Well, I've been looking at models, and it's hard to know what's going to be successful. But when you look at MinPost, it's a great model. It underwent a site redesign. It looks pretty doggone good in a browser. Especially, I read most of my reading is done on the iPad. But the thing that I have a real problem with is, I think about Rick Capella's "Bring Me the News."
Which just raised
$3 million. Yep, I saw that.
Unbelievable.
From Meta Wakanin Sioux Tribe.
Yeah.
On Shakopee.
Yeah.
Well, because you know what? I mean, everybody see. I mean, Paul Douglas, formerly of CCO and CARE, has his virtual meteorology offering. So that, it's clear that more and more online organizations are going to need to buy aggregation services, curated services. They're going to have to buy weather services, from other third parties, because you can't do it all. I mean, it just doesn't scale anymore. But you know what? I look at, because Graham, you use Zeit as an aggregator.
I use Zeit as well.
Yeah. And how about Flipboard?
CNN bought it for only $25 million. I still can't believe they sold out that cheap. But
but
CNN appears not to have ruined it. It still is pretty good, right? From what you see?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's changed much.
Yeah.
But my three favorite right now, there are four things that I use every day. One is a news feed called Feedler Pro that brings in my RSS feed. I use Zeit. I use News 360, which is an app that was built by a bunch of Russian kids.
I like that. I use it.
The primary reason I love it is, you can click on a story. And it shows in tabs across the top, like I'm looking at a story right now, Pakistan's top court strikes down contempt law. Now, if I was interested in that and I wanted to see different perspective, The first article is Seattle Times, and there's Reuters, ABC News, Associated Press, Star Tribune, Miami Herald, you know, all of these feeds. So you can really get a nice overview of a particular story. And I do that quite frequently, especially a story like, you know, Romney's new tax plan or Obama's retort to that tax plan. You can look at different points of view. So you can look at conservative publications and you can look at liberal publications and get a much better sense of what's going on rather than just focus on one that maybe is spewing talking points.
Right. But yeah, the one you're talking about is their latest iPad app, which was just it had a major upgrade, right?
Which I like.
Yeah.
But when you look at this and then you look at Flipboard and you look at all the magazines and stuff, to your point, Phil, how the hell is anybody making any money?
Well, exactly. That's what it comes back down to, is because ultimately these people have to make a living that are producing this content. Clearly they have to make a living. So how do they make a living? And obviously Daily is saying, oh, hey, well, we're not making the money that we need to pay to be the ability to pay a third of our staff and remain profitable. So as you know, it's like we talked about a while back that innovation does not always lead to job growth. Innovation rarely leads to job growth. So it's kind of interesting to see, you know, where are we going to go with all of this free stuff and this, you know, will the Internet of Things also impact
absolutely
how people make a living?
Well, and when you look at the fact that everything that right now is inefficient can be made more efficient. And so for every Walmart store that goes in, there's some small town Main Street USA that gets nuked, you know, stores close and everything because they can't compete. You know, they can't buy at that.
They're nuking places now? Wow, they are bad.
They are bad. but people have talked about the same thing with customer service, you know, being able to be outsourced. I mean, there's now a bunch of call centers in Bismarck, North Dakota, for example.
Oh, yeah.
And up on the Iron Range. And they can do it because they can drop in big fiber pipes and have voice over IP and computer connections and run customer service just like they would be doing if they were, you know, in some major metropolitan area. But what about schools? What about education? What about the ability to have virtual teachers and then have coaches and mentors that are in the classroom helping kids? You know, I mean, will that revolutionize education? I mean, I don't know, but anything that's inefficient can be made efficient by cutting out steps out of the process or cutting out people. How many news stations do we need? Do we need 4 evening news stations in the Twin Cities?
Mm-hmm. Do we need one? No, I'm sorry.
What could I argue?
Well, you know, it's
no,
again,
but seriously,
if they were, you know, I think that the There's a point where things have to start differentiating themselves. And that's the problem we have. I mean, you see the success of a Fox News for all of its faults. It's successful because it's different. It's not the same stuff. It's, and I'm not saying I'm a fan of Fox News because I'm not, but it's, you know, they differentiate themselves. So do we need 4 of the same stations? No.
Right.
No. We don't need 4 of the same stations. And they all tend to try to figure out a way that they can be different. And the tough thing is there's only so much news and it's a matter of how you present it to differentiate yourself and who presents it.
But you dealt with the same thing with radio.
Sure. And now in a radio has basically gone the other way and they've gotten to the point of being just sort of the same. You listen to radio stations around the country and because of the scale and consolidation, so many radio stations sound the same these days that it's really, we've lost a lot of the fun of radio, that's for sure. But there are those that are, you know, my work with AMPRS, which is the Association for Minnesota Public Educational Radio Stations, I found that, you know, these community radio stations, the KFAIs, the KUMDs, the KUOMs or Radio Ks of the world, these are radio stations that are different from a standpoint, they're strictly focused on community. But they would not exist without funding from listeners and from outside sources because they're so community oriented. They're not mass appeal enough to command an audience that will, you know, be able to sustain them. So as far as an advertising model, So but there's great radio out there and there's great TV out there. It's just a matter of, you know, finding it and supporting it.
But could you argue that there's just too much? I mean, you know, Graham, do you watch any of the video stuff like from The Verge or Engadget or any of the show, any of the podcast shows on technology?
Not really. No, it takes too long. Not really. Yeah, I don't watch a lot of video.
How about you, Phil?
Well, no, you know, exactly. You look, the first thing I ever do when I see a video that piques my interest is I'll look at the time. How long is it? What's my commitment? So
exactly. Right.
And there's just not enough time to commit to all of it. And you know, that's the flaw of 24-hour news channels is there's just not enough content to fill 24 hours. And that's when it starts to get exploitive and stupid and just crazy.
Yeah.
And it's just like, oh my God, stop. There's not this much news in this story.
Yeah.
Well, but I look at what, at the whole thing with social media, we've been, talking about this, but, also in the show notes about the, this, how social media has potentially taken any suspense out of the Olympics in prime time. Mm-hmm. And NBC's just getting slammed.
Oh, I'm not really sure why. It's just, you know, what are they supposed to do? They've got to try to make a living. So they've got to be able to pay. That's an expensive, expensive play for them to get the Olympics coverage. The Olympics committee is, they're not giving this stuff away.
Right.
So it's very difficult. You know, you got a 6 hour time shift, and that's just enough to make it difficult to keep people, you know, in suspense and keep things from people. You're not going to be able to keep anything from anybody in this always connected, always on world. So I, you know, lay off NBC. God, they're trying hard.
Did you see the Wall Street Journal story? It was something like, despite Twitter backlash, NBC might break even on the Olympics.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
And I thought, whoa, breaking even. Wow, that's quite the accomplishment.
Flat is the new up. Yeah.
Oh, right. Man. But yeah, but they were, the talk was they were going to lose their rear ends on the Olympics, but apparently, you know, they aren't. So that's good news for them, I guess. Yeah. Say, speaking of media news, did you see the local story? The Star Tribune gains a majority owner. The Wayzata Investment Partners
just
now own 58% of that puppy. And and the Star Tribune's story is hyping up how well they're doing. And, you know, this thing might actually be worth some money. It's worth $49 million now, you know. But the word is, interviewing the analysts, that, it, you know, they're preparing it for sale. That's what Wayzata Investment Partners does. They're a private equity firm that fixes assets up to sell them. Now, who knows how long that might take, but they feel, apparently, Wayzata Investment Partners feels good about the property because they're investing more in it, and they can much better sell it when they have a majority position in it. So,
right,
put that in.
That's
the
interesting.
Show
yeah, that's great. Other news, you know, it's been kind of one of those little bits and pieces news weeks. I don't know if
it has.
Can you point to anything that's like the huge story of the week?
No.
But Google bought Wildfire, which is a social media dashboard. That should be interesting. I don't know how much news that is, but they're, you know, they continue to find their way into the social media space. I saw a little blurb. I don't remember where I saw it, guys. Maybe you saw it as well, but that Google is sort of holding off on any more investment in Google Plus.
Oh, really?
Did you see that?
I didn't.
I may have to take a look for that. But so, that, you know, it's just a rumor that they're saying, you know, okay, it's not that they're not closing it down. It's not that. It's just that there's this posture of, well, let's wait and see what happens here. Maybe this isn't going to be a long-term play for us, and let's not go crazy. I think the article did point out that they are still planning a Hawaiian escape for the Google Plus employees. So...
Really?
Yeah, they do, you know, big retreats and things like that for their staff. So, because they're Google and they can do that.
Sure. And now Marissa's doing that Google stuff over at Yahoo, you know, with the free lunches and read where it'll be $5,000 a year for each employee? That's $20 million bucks.
Yeah, wow. but again, you know what? It keeps them. When I worked for Panasonic Communications and Systems Company back in the early 90s, and I'd go to Secaucus, New Jersey about every other week. We'd have a
you
meeting.
You poor guy.
Oh, sorry God. About that.
I know. Tell me about it. Although it was really fun to head across, go under the Lincoln Tunnel and go to Manhattan and hang out.
Oh,
but
yeah.
They had a cafeteria that was probably one of the best I'd ever been to. And of course they had incredible Japanese cuisine there for obvious reasons. And the big thing was that everybody stayed.
Yeah. That's what it's all about.
Everybody stayed
because it was an investment in getting people to work longer. So
yeah.
if you don't have to go out for lunch, you won't take an hour.
Well, yeah, typically you'll take an hour, but you'll slop over. It'll be an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And
that's not going to happen if you just have to walk down the hall to the cafeteria and get your free food.
Right, so. right.
So,
yep.
So I think it's a solid investment. A lot of companies are doing that here locally as well. So,
well, I just wanted to touch on before we go past this.
Yes.
Is the wildfire thing.
Yeah.
And it's because I looked at that and I said, wait a minute. Now, can't Google build their own platform for delivery? And I didn't know much about wildfire, and I still don't. But it's not so. I don't see it as so much of a social media dashboard as it is a way to deliver ads. And maybe it is that maybe it's an aggregation play. I just can't figure it out yet.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe it'll be such a great free tool like Google Plus and Gmail and Google Analytics and all this different stuff that you'll say, sure, I'll put the code on my website if it's Google Analytics, or yeah, I'll connect up all my social media accounts in one tool.
Yeah. Oh yeah. It has the potential to be big, and they paid a lot of money for that outfit. But if, you know, I would think that there's tons of dashboards out there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there's some really good ones,
like
Sprout Social.
Right.
I would think those guys have got to be real worried now about their future, you know, if Google's coming in to stomp all over them.
I don't know. I don't know if they necessarily need to worry, you know, what the issue can become is how will this impact Google's desire to share analytics with you? I mean, right now you just basically plug in code for Google Analytics and you have access to your own analytics, a lot more analytics across the interwebs. But if they say, okay, well, we're not going to share those with you anymore, that can be the death knell for, you know, those platforms that are out there.
Right.
Yep. Yeah, so it's a significant announcement. I mean, you know, everybody wants to measure their social media and their online advertising, and if they can do it with one platform.
Oh, sorry, you cut out there a little bit. Graham, are you still there?
I'm here, and I'm opening up pages while we're talking.
Ah, that's it.
And video and audio starts playing when I open a window, and it's the damn Star Tribune is what it is.
Oh.
I wish they wouldn't do that when I open a web page, you know. So that's the background noise, and I have to keep hitting mute. But anyway, say I thought of more another local news thing in addition to smart things. I'm going to put it in the show notes. How could I forget this? Our buddies at Kidblog launched a new Facebook page. They're out in California for the summer at 500 startups.
Right?
Okay. Well, not Y Combinator, but closely sort of related, okay. 500 startups. Mm-hmm. They are being incubated for at least the summer at the 500 startups offices in Mountain View. And they launched a new Facebook page. And I happen to know that we will see a new website for them soon, which is pretty damn cool. So anyway, I'm going to put the Facebook.
Not a website. Oh my
everybody,
God.
Everybody, well, but they had, you know, you remember their old website.
Yeah.
For a leader in that field, you know, they definitely needed a better website. Well,
website. What's a
it's
website?
Coming.
I'm sorry. What's a website?
Well, it's
interesting
that they started with a Facebook page, but everybody needs to go like the Kidblog Facebook page. It just came on stream yesterday, I think. So I'm going to put that in the show notes. Congrats to those guys. They're making a lot of cool progress out there in the Valley this summer.
That's
Matt
great.
Hardy and Dan Fleece, who are now funded from Silicon Valley Angels and 500 Startups, and are on a going to be on a tear, I'm sure. So congrats to them.
Well, let's see. There's a couple of big Microsoft things. First, Hotmail becomes Outlook.com. That makes it cooler, right?
Oh, yeah. Much cooler.
Okay.
Yeah, Microsoft. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't
cool. Well, be kind.
Gates no, no. Their own names at Outlook.com.
I think that's interesting. Say that again, because I don't know. You cut out for everybody. You kind of cut out for me, Graham. But
somebody apparently they were a little asleep at the switch there at Microsoft because somebody went and grabbed Ballmer at Outlook.com and Gates at Outlook.com.
That's great.
And a bunch of others, I think, really valuable ones. So it's like people are hoarding these names.
Right.
Holding them hostage, I guess.
Unbelievable.
Which I think is a riot.
So they've finally got, because I don't know. It's kind of interesting because when somebody says to me, gives me their email address and it's a Hotmail email address, I think, wow, you've had that a long time.
90s. Yeah. Oh, 90s you are.
Yeah. So now it's Outlook.com. Have you guys checked it out at all? Have you looked at it?
Nah.
No.
But
I actually got philwilson.com, probably the first thing I've ever gotten where I've actually gotten my, or at philwilson at outlook.com. First time I've ever gotten my full name without having to come up with something creative. So let me just ask why you haven't looked at it, guys. Because I mean, you've all had experience with Outlook in the past. What's the reason that you haven't looked at it?
Well, for me, it's because I have both Gmail and Google Apps accounts, and there is so much that they do beyond email that it would make no sense for me to switch.
Right.
And one thing I don't need is yet another email address.
Well, and that's exactly right. It's that's the thing that, even though I hopped on it, I looked around the interface and then I bailed. It's like, okay. Well, Gmail does everything for me. Google Apps does everything I need as well. So I guess I'm not sure why to go after Outlook. But.
Well, again, if it what's really fascinating to me is what people want is they want the ability to have their email and their calendar and yada, 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 all integrated. Right.
Sure.
And
sure.
Now with Google Docs and spreadsheets and all that stuff, it's all integrated in one account. And if you're a company, you can create Google Sites as an intranet and put gadgets up. And so you can make a nice home for all your connections, for all your stuff that anyone on your domain can reach. It's incredibly valuable.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would say that Outlook is cool, but what they need is a platform with multiple services to compete with Google.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So we'll have to see what happens there.
And then I just saw this yesterday. Microsoft is now avoiding the word Metro.
Yeah. What is it? Some German company or something?
Yeah. According to Ars Technica. Yeah. It's Ars Technica is the Metro AG in Germany is presenting some problems to the folks over at Microsoft. So Steve Ballmer has now moved to Windows 8 style. That's what they're calling it now instead of Metro style. It's Windows 8 style.
They sure have problems with their names, don't they? I mean,
They just can't seem to avoid stepping on their own dick. That's all there is to it. They just really, it's like, okay, here's Windows Phone 8. We don't know when it's going to be out, but here it is. And here's Windows 8. We don't know when it's going to be out, but here it is.
Oh, geez. Well, I think they should use alphanumerics. So it should be Windows 8 UI-47.
Very nice.
Yeah. Well, actually, nice. Daring Fireball, John Gruber, was teasing him about this, and he clipped something out of one of the articles about that they couldn't use the Metro thing, and here's why, and instead they're going to call it Windows 8 style UI, yeah. And then he put a period, and then he put snappy.
Very snappy. It is. This is kind of interesting to me from a standpoint of, I have a very good impression of Windows Phone 8. I like the Windows 8 style UI. It's a snappy little interface. It's clean. It's very Metro-like. And I also look at how big a play this is for Microsoft, because say what you will about Microsoft, they're responsible for so much as far as technology and innovation, especially early on in the computer age, I guess, if you could say that. But this is such a vital play for them. Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8 is such a vital play for them. Yeah, and I think they've got a great premise here in the fact that they will be the first to unify the experience across all screens. Now, you can say that Apple is doing that, but they're still not completely compatible, between the phone and the desktop. But this is a very interesting way it's all rolling out. It's not like they're trying to get it out fast, not get it out right.
Well, yeah, you know what though? I will tell you that I really pushed back hard on a couple of people, and I've done it with Julio about the reason that the iPad isn't ready for a lot of tasks. And one of the big missing pieces was, and this is anyone who has a hosting account and has websites where they host, or they want to be able to put files somewhere and so forth, you need to use FTP. And you want to use secure FTP. Well, so I've been trolling, looking for this for a long time. I mean, not actively, but just, trying to come across it. And so here I am out at Comic-Con with my son, and middle of the day, and I got to move a file from my Dropbox account to our server. And I thought, how the hell am I going to do that? So I get on the App Store, I find an app called Cargo, K-A-R-R-G-O for iPad, and it has two panes. And on the left pane, I logged into my Dropbox account, and in the right pane, I logged into my server, and I could touch the file in Dropbox, click the arrow, and it transferred it to the server. And I was sitting here watching that, and I thought, okay, yes, I'd like to have 47 tabs open in a browser right now and be able to do everything in a browser, but this is pretty awesome. It actually works. So there's that sort of thing. Even though it wouldn't continue in the background. I tried quitting the app or minimizing the app and bringing up another app, but the FTP connection stopped. So the app has to be in front of you. At least on your computer, you can run multiple things. But the point is no longer do I have to have my MacBook Air 11-inch and my iPad with me in order to make sure that if something comes up that I can do my work. And that was one of the most impressive things about Microsoft's strategy with Windows 8 is being able to have that multi-interface where, if you really got to get into the back end, you can do it.
And I think that's still there, but the problem is these sorts of things keep coming up with Microsoft that start casting doubt, because I think that as vital as the Windows 8 play is, or the Windows Phone 8 play is, I think it can rise to the challenge. But every time this comes out, this sort of thing comes out, it's like, well, you guys, if you're not checking your trademarks, guys, are you checking how things are working?
I'm sure somebody got fired over this.
Yeah. And the size of the legal staffs that these companies have, it's amazing. They can be so stupid,
Yeah. So I just think it's interesting to see how this plays out, because I am there's part of me that is rooting for Microsoft in this situation. So it's kind of frustrating. It really
well,
is.
I read in the comments on one of the articles about this that I connected to off TechMeme that somebody had said that Germany typically is looked at as sort of the leader for the European Union when it comes to trademark and copyright sorts of issues, or issues like this, that if Germany goes apeshit, everybody else will. And so I thought that was kind of interesting that if a German company and the German courts sort of back down on stuff, so does the rest of the European Union. So So Germany is looked at as sort of the thought leader in that space of you know, pushing back on the U.S. or not. And so I wonder if that's what was going on here, that it's not just Metro AG in Germany. It's potentially this ripple effect throughout the European Union. And Microsoft's like, look, we don't want to screw up this launch of Surface.
Yeah, the trademark attorneys at Microsoft have gotten to know quickly that it was time to back off.
Right.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Say, speaking of Microsoft, we didn't touch on this on the media discussion earlier, but they sold out their share in MSNBC. So now it's just NBC.
Oh, yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
So when are they going to drop the MS or the PMS, as it's often called?
No, good question.
PMSNBC. So will it? What will it become? NBC 2 or NBC Ultra? Maybe, yeah, NBC Ultra would be a good name. I'm going to grab that one.
Huh. Well,
I don't, go online.
Does it just roll into CNBC?
Well, that would be crazy. The business network? Oh, whoa.
Yeah, we'll have to see.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. So, well, listen, what's coming up in events, guys? What do you guys see on the horizon?
Next week is the data venue thing. So that's a positive.
Doc Searles will be in town.
Yeah, it was Garrick Van Buren and I. We sat at the mini WebCon a couple of years ago. There were about six of us that sat with Doc for like 2 hours. And that was really a delight. The guy, I followed him for a very long time. And at one point I was saying, yeah, do you remember when you were talking about your mom and you had her maiden name in there and what town she was born in and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I'd actually done a comment saying, you know, it's a security thing. You probably shouldn't do that. Because at that time, a lot of banks and other institutions were using your mother's maiden name as one of the hidden secret questions that they could verify your identity. And he looks at me and he goes, oh my God, I do remember that.
Doc is really a great guy. Yeah. And he's drawing the people out to this event next week. Let me tell you, people are signing up. It's always last minute, you know, but we've got it. We'll have it in the show notes, but today is the last day of the early bird rate, Friday, August 3rd. So if people want to come and see Doc and learn all about vendor relationship management and the, you know, putting the customer first, and the customer is God. Did you see that as God? Did you see that Wall Street Journal piece that Doc did a week or so ago?
No.
And
oh,
of course,
yes,
he'll
I did.
Be, yeah, the customer is God. And we'll have to put that in the show notes. And of course, his new book, The Intention Economy. He'll be signing copies of that, or if you have one already, bring it along. And the other folks from the Internet Identity Workshops, Phil Windley, the former CIO of the state of Utah, great guy, has a book called The Live Web, which just came out about 6 months ago. He's going to be there, and Kalia Hamlin, who's the head of this personal data ecosystem, is the third major speaker and very much a player in this whole personal data as the new asset class meme. So it's going to be a great first day. And the other thing is we've got at least three local founders who are going to be on panels. Leif Larson from Workface, Joel Nash from Assist Me, and Paul Saarinen on a little-known stealthy startup called Meenome, which is extremely interesting. We'll be talking more about what that's all about, and certainly a personal data-related startup. So it's going to be pretty exciting. And the second day will be an unconference format. And the afternoon sessions are free for startups and students, at least a limited number of places are available. So everybody should go online to Data Venue without an E, DATVENU.com, and try to get a ticket.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, one thing that we didn't have in here in the show notes was the Minnesota State Fair starting August 23rd.
That's right.
So we you know got to make sure we go to that and go to Machinery Hill. I know, Phil, you're going to spend a lot of time there.
I love Machinery Hill. I used to love Machinery Hill. Machinery Hill was like, that was the cool place.
Actually, you know what? In all seriousness, it was kind of awesome when I was a kid and going up climbing on the tractors.
Yeah, exactly. Closest to the thing, some of those behemoths that they have there now. So it's just not as big as it used to be. But what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Go have yourself a deep fried something on a stick.
Yeah, or chocolate covered bacon. Remember when we did that at the social media breakfast thing over there under the tent? Oh God, it seemed good at the time.
Well, I wonder too about the if they're going to have that technology pavilion. You know, sometimes some years it's really great, and then other years it's like what?
Yeah.
I mean, they've had some interesting things in there with respect to electric car technology way before it was even close to being mainstream. And but some of the big players used to be there. Microsoft and IBM used to have big booths there, and now they don't. So I'm wondering sorts of thing. I'm gonna poke around their site a little bit before I publish the post today, and we'll see what's there.
Well, Microsoft can't afford to be there anymore. They've got a big budget now to buy back those Outlook.com names that they didn't grab.
Yeah. Somehow I don't know. I don't know if that'll be the case. But anyway.
Anywho. Well, so lots of doings.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is. Hey, by the way, I don't think we heard anything back from our friend Ben Edwards here.
Well, we'll try and get him on one of the future podcasts here.
We'll get him. He's sleeping late. He had a big day yesterday.
He could have.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Great.
Listen, gentlemen, thanks very much for joining us, joining in, and we look forward to seeing you next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast. Take care, guys.
Yeah, you too.